very much for coming to our first lunchtime talk with Peter Kennard and Kat Phillips, who we're delighted again to be discussing art and activism. We wanted to set up a series of talks with Martina, partly on the basis of trying to provide a slot that wasn't an evening slot of which there were loads, to see whether there was an appetite for a lunchtime series. And from today's turnout, it seems that there is, which is great. So we will continue and so watch our space for new talks on the agenda. I'm going to hand over to Kat and Peter, who are basically going to run the show. I think you'd like to have questions during it, but
Everyone to feel free to ask or question or complain or whatever as we're going, because we find that it becomes more informative for all of us.
So, over to you.
Right. We're collaboration. We work together, and we've been working together since 2002, and it came about through the invasion of Iraq and wanting to make work about it, going on to the demo, and then, as we all know, it was not responded to, so any of the anti-war feeling was not responded to. So we started wanting to actually make images about what was going on, to express our feelings. I suppose it's a way of expressing anger, it's a way of expressing...
And a way of acting as citizens as well. I mean, it was an extending our protest after the main demo, the massive one in February 2003, had failed to have any impact on government policy. So, and our collaboration is obviously, well, I don't know if it's unusual, but it has many... we're two different genders, we're two different generations, and we're at two different points in our artistic careers as well, because Peter's obviously got a long history behind him, whereas this collaboration was the start of my resolving any sort of form of artistic practice that I'd already had before we started work together. And I was coming from... I was printing for photojournalists when I met Peter, and... he was obviously had his art practice. So the way we connected at first was me bringing print and digital print and digital technology to his practice. And so the first one, we'll show you what we made together in 2003 at the very start of our collaboration. It's a series of prints. There are 15 in the series. And... do you want to talk about the fact that it was your first sort of delve into digital technology?
Yeah, well, it started because I'd always had a feeling that digital technology was very was very clean and organised and sussed, and I suppose all the opposite of what I am. So I was a bit wary of it. But then, starting to work with Kat, we found that we could actually put materials straight onto the flatbed, you know, a small A4 flatbed scanner. You could throw dust on it, oil on it, blood on it, anything onto this. All the things you're not meant to do with a nice clean scanner, which is what we did. So we put the actual clasp of a medal onto the glass, and ribbons, flags that were torn up, and just put them on the glass, and then added an image. Usually at the bottom you can see that one of the victims of the invasion of Iraq. Added it underneath with Photoshop, so you could get the sort of grit of what was. You know, one of the things about making work is trying to get through the sort of smoothness of the response to it, and trying to make something rough, and trying to make something that's got a sort of edge to it. Mm. And these are the first things we did.
And so it was a series of 15. We're only showing three here because we've got a lot of years of work to go through. But certainly my approach to making this work was we were using a lot of press photography, although these three, there's only one, the previous one that examples that. But I'd been in such a dilemma about the upcoming invasion that I'd gone to... I'd done a short trip around Lebanon, Syria and Jordan in December and January 2002, 2003, because I felt it, there was so much propaganda coming out of the press, the British press at that time, that was really, I felt, extremely anti that part of the world. You know, it was all like the lead up to the war to back it up. And so I literally went on a trip there to just get my own perspective, because I felt that the onslaught of the media attention on that part of the world and that culture was actually beginning to skew my mind. And so I was very, I think with the materials, what interested me about doing work with Peter was that it allowed to get some sort of material truth together with those press images, and that's been an ongoing element of our work. But at the end of producing this work, we ended up with fine prints in frames, like in this room. And the process was actually very, very, so much more valid and important to me than what the final form that we ended up with. So we talked about that, and what we did next was much more direct, I suppose, and a much faster way of working, and less aesthetic concerned with sort of technical deliberations.
So we got invited to show there's an international exhibition called East that was run by Linda Morris in Norwich, and it was curated by Gustav Metzger, and he wanted to do work that wasn't just gallery based. That came. The original idea was to do work on the web and on radio and TV, and so that it wasn't about a gallery. And we originally were going to design something for a website, but it was too expensive to produce, and it didn't work. So we made a website live in the exhibition, and this was a space we had in the basement of the art college where the show was on. And it was like seven, so we worked up there for 7 weeks and produced work. We managed to get sponsorship from the Hewlett-Packard, which I managed to borrow from the Royal College where I teach. And Hewlett-Packard thought they could use us as PR, so they paid to have the machine taken up, gave us free ink. And then, of course, they saw what we were doing, and we never heard another word from them. But by then it was too late, and we had all the... We could print stuff out, and we print onto newsprint, which you can get from free from. We got a place called Newsfax that prints the Sun
and the Guardian.
On the print, the Guardian, I think they do as well. Yeah, and at the end of a news, the end of a roll, there's tons of newsprint left, and they send it off for recycling, but they let us have rolls of it. So it means we can have free paper going through, and we printed a lot of posters.
Using photo montage and
left the machine on overnight sometimes, printing out these things. And of course, the people in the area, it's quite an activist area around Norwich, they began to hear about it, so they came in to get the posters that they could use. And also people worked in the space, so it's quite a few students came in, we had computers there, so people could produce their own work and make it. So it's an amazing opportunity to create a hybrid space between a studio, a gallery,
and an activist
sort of meeting place. And we have books there people could read. So, and it's one of the great things about digital technology that you can have it working in the same space that you're in. It's not like you need a dark room. Mm. So you can see the whole thing of authoring something and then producing it, which is what, you know, goes back to Benjamin's ideas about the author as producer.
Mm. So we really, jumped into activism, or in a way went back to it, because that's how we had met, was around the demos at the beginning of the invasion anyway. And this was one of the posters of that series, Stop Posters. And we just wanted to have a quick look at this one in particular, because it's it helps demonstrate, I mean, it really clearly demonstrates how photo montage is a great way, if you want to disseminate something, if you're making work that has a political agenda, this is a ready, it's almost like a ready-made, it can be taken by the that's a long thing to say, but it can be taken by the press and just reproduced. So it was, and you need that vehicle of another organisation or an industry like the press to run with something to get distribution, because what we found with the posters, all the ones that we made in East, we had them and they were free to collect and take away by activists who visited, but as soon as we tried to disseminate them further, I took a whole bunch up to Glen Eagles, the G8 demonstrations in Scotland that year, and quickly found out, well, it's great to have made some artwork, but in fact, to actually get it out to people to use on placards or whatever is a whole nother thing. In a year later, this one got picked up by Banksy for his Santa's Ghetto, which he held in Oxford Street in a disused shop that year. And because it's Banksy and, it gets a lot of press attention, everything that he does now. And he put it in the window of that little exhibition and it got huge popular interest, which then allowed that image to sort of take off a life of its own. And ever since, it's been popping up and sort of travelling around different aspects of news items and news agendas. And the most recent thing it got picked up for was that when Blair did his book launch, and we were going to take a whole lot of placards of it down in collaboration with Stop the War to protest outside the Tate. And when he cancelled his launch there, his launch party, the press picked up on that. So,
but I think we could say what actually happened. The cat was on, what's it called, Breakfast News, is it called that, on ITV?
I don't know.
She was filmed with all these placards of that around her at 7:30 in the morning.
On the day,
and then he cancelled 3 hours later. So it's obviously
the terror of being faced by
frightened at all these
my
things,
two-year-old like, daughter and
the people there. And he never did the book launch in the end. He never did the book signing, he never did the book launch. So I think it's quite, little achievements.
Yeah. We were just chatting on our way here, and Peter said something. This is a Guardian review of a show that was on this summer at Tate Britain, which was called Rue Britannia, and it was about British comic art, which they included a lightbox version of this image. And Peter made the point that it only got into Tate Britain, this artwork, because of that context. You know, it wouldn't probably be hung there as part of the permanent exhibition alongside whatever other works. It's still too direct, too current, too dangerous. But within that context, you know, they were able to include it. And we certainly believe that our work presents to curators and, more so curators than anyone organising arts events. Our work does offer the opportunity for those as a bit of activism within their own job. So it's not entirely activist on a street level. It's also works as activism within institutions or within a wider sort of context.
So it's important to get stuff. I mean, the Scottish National Gallery has bought this, a light box, as a portrait of Blair, because they have to buy one, they have to have one of him because he went to school up there. And the curator decided to get that as their image of Blair. They haven't actually dared show it yet, I don't think. So it's great to be able to infiltrate institutions through the people that, have got different beliefs, that they're not institutional beliefs. Obviously, there are people like that in these places.
So this is just a few commissions that we've done, photo montage commissions for the editorial market. This is our finished version of it, but it was actually rejected by. It was commissioned by the Telegraph to illustrate an article about American money coming into the city of London, but also about bankers' bonuses. And it was quite early on, it was in 2006, so it was before that was largely being spoken about widely across the press. But anyway, they rejected the fact that we had the boarded up, you know, derelict street at the bottom with all the broken money, the useless money on it. So, and they asked us, we had to compromise and actually take that out for them to go ahead and use the work. But they wanted us to put in a yacht or a Learjet or something, you know, to do with the wealthy, but which we refused. But I think the point of showing these things is just that the way that we've been using photomontage in connection with getting commissions. Pick up, Peter, pick up.
So this one was the third runway, which Labour was supporting at that time. So, you know, one like this is like a classic idea of montage, really, just putting two images together to get across the mean. And this was like a full-page poster of Greenpeace, I think it was in the Guardian Independent.
Yeah.
And that was a cover we did for Telegraph, where they do these pictures of the... the Telegraph picture editor, I think he was a picture editor on the magazine, suddenly started wanting really heavy duty stuff from us, you know, which is great. I mean, we did about four and then we never heard again, so he probably got the sack, but he wanted a very strong image like that.
And it is,
you get quite conflicting things going on now in the press, you know, like The Guardian had a very innocuous picture on their magazine for their year's pictures, whereas The Telegraph wanted something very strong. So it's quite strange.
Yeah, and this again, this is from, you know, someone we wouldn't expect to hear from. It was from Bloomberg Businessweek, asked us if we'd illustrate, it was a review of a book. So we don't say no to these commissions, even though they're obviously coming from editorial that we aren't interested in it politically or are opposed to most of the time. But the way we look at it is if we give them a piece of, although I suppose we did compromise on the Telegraph one.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't on this one, you know, we said if they want to print what we are happy, you know, to make, then so be it.
Yeah. And you can always get a rejection fee if they don't. So,
did they print it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they printed that one. Yeah, they did.
Yeah. They're very happy with it. Although, yeah, I mean, we'll see if we ever hear from them again and if that guy's job survives.
Yeah, it's usually one off for each newspaper or magazine. So, but after doing like those prints, we did a series of very big paintings that were like we made montages and then printed them on the Epson. Inkjet, printed them onto canvas. You can get a canvas for it, and then painted on top. So again, it's to try and experiment with ways of making something that's got a physicality about the actual object. And with this one, we took it out of our studio in Hackney and put it on the wall under the railway bridge, and then rubbed on the canvas, so the wall, a bit like brass rubbing, so that is actual wall coming through onto the image.
And I think in terms of, because we're still using press photography and printing it on canvas before we, you know, make some sort of layout quite crudely before we start painting and scraping on it. And I think that there is something about when we've been researching the photo, you know, collecting the imagery, it really felt, I mean, it felt looking through, you know, doing a keyword search on Iraq and looking through everything that came up, it felt immediately that we were not seeing, I mean, that the newspapers somehow didn't represent all the footage that was coming in. I mean, it's obviously a newspaper is what it is, but we were seeing a huge amount of graphically disturbing imagery. And so I suppose putting it into a painting was somehow trying to battle against that, preserving it in a way, preserving that evidence and preserving that person's story. Whereas in the context of editorial, it's obviously a daily turnover. So there's some sort of battle going on there.
And obviously there's an enormous amount of bravery involved in the photographers getting some of these images. And this is just a one-off in a paper.
Or not even printed because it's deemed editorially or, the editorial, what do you call it?
Well,
when it says graphic content, see editor, you know, it's all in debate.
Yeah, well, they say graphic content, see editor on all the images. So those ones are...
Because it seems there's quite a lot of critical theory building up around, you know, there's an argument beginning about this whole idea of empathy fatigue and, you know, whether or not what it's actually doing when you compassion fatigue and what it's actually doing to represent the trauma of another visually.
Susan Sontag, when she completely changed her views on that, between on photography and what was her last book on
Regarding
the Pain of Others, where she actually realised she hadn't valued enough the work that was being done by the photographers in the first book, and actually saw it as really important and vital what they're doing.
So the three dark paintings that we just looked at, they're all on canvas. That was all canvas that came as part of that Hewlett-Packard sponsorship thing in East. That obviously ran out at some point, and we ran out of sponsorship. So part of the reason that the sort of form changes here was due to that lack of budget. So we made our own canvases by just pasting together newspapers with PVA glue. And then we found an acid-free, very thin white paper that's normally used, its intended purpose is to put between bromide prints, you know, when you're storing them. And so we made a top print to paste onto this newspaper canvas, printing on this acid-free paper, which is very, very thin, and we found quickly that we could manipulate the image in a completely hands-on way, where we've originally been only manipulating the image digitally. And it's so fragile, that paper, that when you mix it with... if you wet it in any kind of way and then start to bash at the surface, the paper and the image literally explode, and you end up with this sort of... symbolic rubble, you know, around whatever fragment of the image is left. And we're still using kind of ideas of montage, you know, with these large works. And
how large are those?
Was it 8 meters? Enormous. Yeah, we had a
big
studio.
About 8 meters by 3 feet.
Really big. So we just got them rolled up now, you know.
But we could go to that scale because this was all essentially free materials. I mean, the ink that was involved in printing that was minimal. And I am a self-employed printer, so I own my own equipment. So that's the equipment that we use. So it's kind of really, you know, just run off the back of whatever work I'm doing. I've got a bit of ink in my cartridges. And those large printers are much cheaper to run than anything small.
So that's a fragment of that one that's got the president, the podium on it. So the idea was, you know, you've got the podium with no one there, and behind it was actually not speaking. It's all the horror that's going on in Iraq. And then this very clear image in the middle.
And this is another made in the same way.
The more fragile works, are they one-offs, or do you addition them?
No, these are one-offs, yeah.
How would you addition something like that?
You can only do it once, yeah.
You don't have the possibility of rescanning a piece of paper.
This?
Yeah.
Well, this is 5 meters by 3, and I don't know, I mean, there probably is somewhere within industry some sort of scanning equipment, in the, I don't know, mapping world, but we have photographed it and made a digital print of it.
Yeah.
So in that way, we've made an addition. But yeah, the actual, all we've done is made more of them. You know, and tried to find other subjects. This was about Israeli invasion in Lebanon, and it was the top of the ambulance where the bomber, the Israeli plane, has used the cross of the ambulance, the Red Cross, as its target. So the hole in the middle was, that's from the original photo. I mean, it's shot right through the middle of the cross.
And some of these, like the women in from that image, we stick them on back to front, upside down on the paper, on the backing newspaper, and then put a bit of linseed oil in, so they sort of appear. So you get this sort of symbolic thing of these the images of the women appearing and disappearing, and not being seen in the world. Whereas the soldier is very clear. And that was a version we showed in a museum in Holland.
So this is a second version that we've made of this, an attempt to remake the same thing on site in the Van Abbey Museum in Eindhoven, where they were doing a large sort of historical show of political work starting in the mid-19th century up to the present.
Is any of your work been about Afghanistan rather than Iraq? The US military's reference to Afghan women as blue moving objects on the face.
Oh, wow. No, but that's a great quote.
Yes, straight.
Which I haven't actually heard before.
I'm just interested in what your focus on Iraq rather than Afghanistan.
I think, I mean, when we met, we were introduced to each other at the end of 2002, and we were both so bound up with what was about to happen,
right,
that was, I guess, our focus. And I can't really explain why we haven't made any work specifically about Afghanistan.
Right.
So we then, because we were using the newspaper, I quickly discovered, well, hey, we can overprint on real newspaper. So, and then we started to think about finding a way to use the actual content of the newspaper that we were, you know, using as a material. So this was a sort of first look at that, where we've overprint. So it was a commission for the Houston Center of Photography. And so we got them to send us a whole lot of the local newspaper, Houston Chronicle, which we overprinted with Bush's portrait. So just taking, you know, individual sheets of the newspaper and putting them through the machine with a section of that image. And then behind it, we've laid that on top of, we've ripped through his image to reveal images again from all over Iraq, and this is from Guantanamo. And those images we printed on the Al-Arabi, which is an Arabic language newspaper, which was the sort of closest we could get to represent
the
other side.
We took the whole thing over in like a little portfolio suitcase, because that's the thing, you know, something like this, you can actually pack it. Thinking we might get done in at the customs in Houston, because this is in bushland, but they actually hated Bush in Houston. They didn't think he was a real cowboy. So they liked the image, you know.
That's another one. We always think we're more dangerous than we actually are. That keeps us going.
Something they got banned.
I'm aware of the time, and that there might be more questions wanted, because we're supposed to finish at 1:30, is that right? So
right,
just push on
okay
through.
This was an enormous one. It was like a commission for Akademie der Kunst in Berlin, which was doing a big show about surveillance. So, and they had a basement with this enormous concrete wall. So we got a control room image printed onto posters, street posters.
Billboard
posters, and then worked on them when they were scratching at them and pulling at them and putting tons of images from everywhere.
When you get commissioned, we are really interested in these. Do the museums give you any do they make any suggestions, or do they give you a completely free rein?
Completely free rein.
Completely free.
So the content...
Yeah.
This wasn't actually directly commissioned by the Académie de Kunst. What had happened was there was a German artist curator who went to them with a proposal, got his budget from them, but it was him who was actually curating, and whether or not they put any constraint on him when he was selecting what work he wanted to have in the show, I don't know, but certainly he didn't.
New work, you could do what you wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the show was about surveillance, and that's why they chose our stuff.
Okay.
So, yeah, a very strong show, actually. Really,
but what we were trying to do with the actual imagery that we chose to use was trying to mix what was happening in Iraq and Afghanistan with what was happening in the domestic sort of civil liberties of Europe. So we were using a lot of German police patrolling of and stopping of demonstrations and trying to make a connection there. It was an incredibly hard bit of work. This was 4 months after my first daughter. I've only got one, but she was born. As I was still breastfeeding, the piece of work was 18 meters wide by 6 meters high, and there was only Peter and myself to work on it. So.
So the baby, Robin had left.
Peter doesn't like
table.
Climbing scaffolding, so.
I didn't go as high as he did.
And it was pasted directly to the wall, and it was because it was pasted directly to the wall, it only was ever going to have a temporary lifespan. So all of those things together made it actually. I still can't sort of resolve. I mean, it's very difficult as well because it doesn't exist anymore. It's been destroyed when it was. They decided to turn that space in the building into a performance space. It was like a bunker underground that had originally intended to hold the entire German National Art Archive, which they had to abandon. So there was this like kind of abandoned bunker space in Berlin. But it was, yeah.
But do you feel, to a degree, a sense of loss? There must be like a sense of mourning actually.
Oh, well, that one, yeah, I think it'd be great if it still existed somewhere, public building.
So how much is that a consideration then before the work is made?
No,
is it a consideration to get it off the wall in one piece?
No, because we knew that might, we put it up with wallpaper paste. So, and it was done like a big hoarding.
But we had 2 weeks to make it, and like I say, I was a very new mother, so in terms of, you know, the amount of sleep, I was breastfeeding, and we had 2 weeks to make it, and we made the largest piece of work we've ever made. I mean, in a way, the whole thing was completely
mad.
Yeah,
but
really badly.
But if you were to make it again, would you consider the possibility of making it, before you make it, would you consider that it might actually be possible to get it off the wall and preserve it afterwards, or is that still not a concern?
No, I don't think it's.
Well,
in that situation,
we decided to use the space to make it site specific, and to make something that large, they didn't have a budget that would allow. But, so I guess we did consider it, but it didn't change our minds about what we wanted to do.
Well, it wouldn't have the same impact if it was just put onto boards as well. The fact it's on the wall and then it's scraping through to the concrete.
Yeah.
So it's very much integral. But we probably should have recorded it there.
At the beginning, you said this really, really succinct phrase where you said trying to reach the physicality or the materiality that's gone from the image.
Mm.
Can you say a bit more about that? Because I think I'm.
Yeah, well,
I'm
I suppose
really
it's.
In it.
Yeah, well, I think it's that thing of. You know, I mean, one is making art, or I think someone's making some art, and they've got the same concerns as any other sort of artist or painter, and the physicality, working with materials, is incredibly rich thing to do.
But it also is
an expression. You know, the thing about photographs when they're in galleries, there is that smoothness of surface. Every show you get, you see amazing images, but. The surface doesn't reflect the
humanity,
the emotion and the humanity. And I suppose there is that feeling of trying to show the traces of humanity across the actual surface.
It's just really interesting that a problem that is in contemporary art is the sort of same as the problem in representation of physical trauma.
Yeah.
The sort of disappearance of physicality in art. And it's not a surprise, but it's at the same time as the disappearance of the sort of relationship with the body that's traumatized in these images. You know, the,
yeah,
that's sort of gone. It's like a,
yeah.
Like a,
but do you think that's a loss in art? I mean, there is that sense of the physical.
But I'm also aware of the romanticism attached
to
it.
Yeah,
I think relationship to the subject matter and that, you know, the reduction of bodies to images is really interesting. Made the connection between those two problems.
Yeah. Mm. But I mean, there's a danger in it as well, a great danger of aestheticising.
Mm. Yeah.
Because the surfaces could be seen as quite beautiful.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think, because it feels like everything we've done is it fails in a sense, because it never actually can get anything about, you know, the real, what's there.
Yeah.
So it's a sense of attempting each thing and then failing and moving on to another thing, because there is that whole problem of aestheticising horror, and, which, you know, I hope we've got through, but, you know, it's certainly something that one thinks about.
But it can't answer the problem, can it?
No.
It can't solve it, and it sort of over-identifies with it, sort of really hard to put the physical back and sort of reveal the problem.
Yeah.
Sort of.
It over-identifies, so you think it...
These bodies have been disappeared and reduced to images, and so there's a sort of desperate need to kind of reconnect with the physical.
Yeah.
And then by doing that, because it fails, it shows the problem.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so the failure is built into the meaning of it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Rather than the work failing, it's
about
that problem.
Yeah, of never being able to make that connection totally. But we always feel it's important to make work, because that sort of work only really exists in a gallery context.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep flicking through, cause rather than not show.
Carry
on, sorry. No, I'm not.
That's right.
Carry on, you say that sort
no,
of work
but I mean,
shows in the gallery.
I think it's, you know, we both think it's important to make work there. Because in a gallery, it's the only time people will give time to looking at work, you know. But and you can make more complex things in terms of a gallery. You know.
We understand that the gallery is about the problem of looking as well. As a problem.
Yeah, yeah. And I know when we did our first show in 2000, showed in Glasgow. I mean, maybe I romanticised a bit, but I felt there was people who came in to see what they were thinking about the war in Iraq represented in some way on the wall was a sort of boosted their sense of, you know, their own feelings. So it's got that supportive thing sometimes as well.
Can I ask you about the motivation? I mean, it seems to me that, certainly with the earlier stuff you've shown, the motivation of the idea is political. I've seen you described as activists, and you as opposed to necessarily artists or maybe alongside it. Would that be a fair enough description of what you do, an activist? Do you think that when you see it, making these images?
As activists?
Yeah. Or is it...
Well,
I think it's a range of things. I mean, I think we're making work as artists. We're making protests. And we're just trying to act as... Well, I suppose protest is acting as a citizen in response to what one feels partially responsible for, because it's the act of one's government. Or one's system that one lives in. This work's about the disparity between the rich and the poor, and the unpaid, lowest paid workers in the world, and the investment bankers in the square mile. Well, what do you think about being?
It's a label, isn't it? I mean, one goes on a march once an activist. who make art, you're not really an activist, you're making art, aren't you? Or making, it's not like an intention, that's something that one, like a natural thing to do, I think, to use art to talk about the world, I suppose. It's that feeling, you know, I've always felt it, you know. I mean, for me, it's also quite a privilege, isn't it? Because I had a lot of years at art school, getting grants, and then I can make a living from doing half-time teaching. So you think, well, what am I going to do with the work in that space that's left? It's quite a privileged position to be in, that one is, I think, you know, you can't. So it's a matter of using that privilege in some way, I think.
One of the reasons I was asking, because I'm quite interested in, you know, to how much art is art in its broader sense is a vehicle for anything political, because, you know, in some ways, a very nuanced, reasoned argument can't be had in a picture, can it?
No.
But yet the image of Tony Blair photographing himself in front of burning oil fields has a great power, which is given by his demonic expression against that's something that's very unique to the visual. But what you've shown us are two sets of work, editorial and then the gallery stuff, and they have very different feels. The gallery stuff, to my mind anyway, is much less dynamic and it's much more concerned about things that are what I conventionally think of as visual concerns, like the surface, we were talking about physicalness, all of those kind of things. And I'm kind of curious about where the politics sits in that. But that's why I was asking you as an activist, whether you saw them having a function.
Yeah.
No, because the Tony Blair thing, when you take it to the G8, was it?
Yeah,
that's kind of like a banner on a march, isn't it? It's a kind of call to action in some way or another.
Yeah, but is that different from when the Tate choose to put it in their show, or when the Guardian choose to use it as an illustration, or let's say the BMJ, British Medical Journal, used it to illustrate a Polly Toynbee piece about the state of the NHS? And I mean, it's just as much a placard in those contexts as it is on the street. For me,
I think it is. But what I'm trying to pick up on what Michael was visually. For me, responding to looking at the work, because I looked on your website as well, the very graphic editorial pieces, of which Tony Blair is an example, to the beautiful textural quality of the Houston piece. Or the ghostly women wandering around, or the Berlin thing, which is phenomenal. It has a very different. I have a very different response to it.
I'm
engaging much more intellectually and visually to your museum pieces than I am to the eye candy, almost.
Yeah, well, it's a completely different speed.
Yes,
isn't it?
So
but
that,
then
I, just to follow through on that, one I would see as activist. And the other I just see as art.
Well, I see them both as the same.
I'm interested whether you see that same.
I mean, certainly the motivation and the way that we're thinking and talking and working and the place that we're making is it's always the same.
So the impulse is the same?
The impulse is absolutely the same. But the usage and the known sort of circumstance of where it could end up. I mean, we could put up the large paper ones in the street, but we have done that. We made a poster, a billboard print of a photo that was taken of the soldier one and posted it in the street. And some of the large work is, because it's using some sort of version of photo montage, it does have just enough speed to operate on some level in the street. But
it's all art, though, isn't it?
Therein is the debate, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I remember a headline in The Guardian years ago, and I started doing stuff in the galleries where they said, photo montages where they say, now he's doing art.
Yes.
Well, I thought I'd always been doing art. But it's just a different form, isn't it? I mean, someone like Hannah Hock, her work was never looked at in terms of museums 20 years ago, you know, whereas now it's seen as being perhaps the most interesting work of that period in the 20s. So I think things become much more central, that seem quite out on the edge in the end.
Yeah. I work on The Guardian, on the picture desk, and I think that what you do with a picture actually also informs how you read it. So if you put it on the page or the shelf, it becomes an illustration.
Yeah.
It may be a much more interesting illustration than something else, but it becomes an illustration because it's gone on through the page.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
if you're asking people to engage in the text, you're immediately the surrounds.
Broadening the context.
Well, we have a cultural response because we've gone to a gallery or to a museum. And I mean, it's not always successful. If you put something on the wall, it doesn't always actually communicate, but you are being told, because you've walked through the door, how to respond to it. So I think things change according to where you actually
put
them.
Yeah,
because it's more acceptable in the gallery in some ways. It's less.
Or the very fact that the space is kind of like in a vacuum is somehow separated from all the rest of daily tumble, that it's instantly less controversial or confrontational because it's kind of neutralised by the space.
We've just, I don't want to stop it, but for people who are on their lunch breaks, if you're not, then please, we can continue. I'm really happy. But if you are on your lunch breaks, it's now 1:28.
Thank you.
Thanks
for being so patient with us.
So, people who